I want to speak about something we spoke about in the past. This year I'm going to say a different idea, I hope. What I'm going to tell you is in the book that just came out, but the Torah Shebaal Peh is much better than the Torah Shebaal Tzav. We'll try to do it concisely and finish it. What Yat Rosh Hashanah is all about. What exactly you're supposed to accomplish and how do you accomplish it. From God's side, we're being judged. That's His business. How do we react to that judgment in order to get a good judgment? We don't do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. We don't say vidui. Right? So what do we do? So there are many proofs and sources that the motif of Rosh Hashanah is bringing yourself as a sacrifice to God. Just to mention them quickly, we say Slichas 4 days before Rosh Hashanah, according to one opinion, because since we're going to bring ourselves as a sacrifice to God on Rosh Hashanah, so a sacrifice needs to be inspected 4 days for blemishes, so we say Slichas 4 days before. It says in the Medrash, on all the Yomim Tovim, it says, V'hikravtem Ola, and on Rosh Hashanah it says, Va'asisem Ola. Va'asisem can mean make yourself into a burnt offering. Va'asisem Ola. The occurrence in history, aside from the creation of man, which occurred on Rosh Hashanah, is Akedas Yitzchak, which we read, which is the ultimate human sacrifice. Why is that? Why is the motif of Rosh Hashanah making yourself a sacrifice to God? So the Gemara says the following. On every Yontif, we're judged for something else. And when we're judged, in order to merit in that judgment, we bring a portion of what we're being judged on as a sacrifice, and then God blesses the rest. On Pesach, we bring the Omer because we're being judged for grain. So we bring some of the grain, and God blesses the rest. On Shavuos, we're being judged for fruit of the tree. We bring wheat. Even though wheat doesn't grow on trees, but originally it did. The Eitz Hadas, according to one opinion, was a wheat tree. And it says when Mashiach comes, the Lasid Lavo, bread and cake will grow on trees. So the wheat has an idea of a tree, and therefore we bring fruit of the tree, the wheat, as a korban. On Sukkot, we're judged for rainfall, so we bring water and pour it on the Mizbeach. We bring some of what we're being judged on as a sacrifice, and therefore the rest is blessed. Rosh Hashanah, we're being judged for our very lives. So it would follow, according to this pattern, to bring your life as a sacrifice. Either to choose somebody to be a human sacrifice for everybody else, anybody volunteer, or that we cut off a finger, toe, whatever, and sacrifice it on the altar. So we bring a portion of what we're being judged on as a sacrifice, so the rest gets blessed. Since God is very merciful, He doesn't want human sacrifices, nor does He want our toes or fingers on a Mizbeach. So He gave us another way of doing this. And the same Gemara there says, Ubarash Hashanah, on Pesach, bring the Omer. Shavuos, bring the Shtei Alechem. Sukkot, bring pour water on the Mizbeach. And Rosh Hashanah, say Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. And by saying them, that's how you bring yourself as a sacrifice. Now, what does that mean? How by saying a bunch of sentences and a bunch of prayers about God's kingdom, the fact that He remembers us, and the shofar, that takes the place of bringing ourselves, or that affects bringing ourselves as a sacrifice. How does it work? So in order to understand it, you have to understand each thing separately, and then we can understand them all together and see how this affects bringing ourselves as sacrifices, what that means, and how that prepares us for Yom Kippur ultimately. Let's start with Malchios. Normally we understand Malchios, and many understand it like that, that Malchios is what we call Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, accepting the authority of God's kingdom. But it can't be that, because if it is, then it's nothing special. We do it twice already on Rosh Hashanah when we said Shema. So what's special about Malchios if it's Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim? Therefore, I think Malchios is something different completely. What it is the following. The Ramban says that there's a three-stage process in appointing an earthly king. The first stage is the people come and they demand a king. We want a king. They come to the Sanhedrin, the Navi, whoever has to appoint a king, and they show their interest in having a king. The Sanhedrin, the Navi, does not appoint a king until the people say we want one. then they appoint a king, and then there's a mitzvah of som tosim olecha melech, accept the authority of that king. That's called kabbalas ol malchusa. That's accepting the authority of his rule. But there's a stage before that. That is declaring a desire to have a king. Now, why is that necessary? Why can't the Nevi'im and the Sanhedrin just get together and decide it's time to have a king? Why do the people have to come and ask for it? The Vilna Gaon says that there's a fundamental difference between a melech and a moshe. A melech comes from the word lehimolech, to ask advice, meaning that a melech can only be a melech if he is appointed with the will of the people, the advice and consent of the people. People want him to rule, he's a melech. If they don't want him to rule, or it's not with their consent, not against their will, he could be a very fine person, could be a very good ruler. But if he's not ruling by consent of the people, he's a moshe, not a melech. By when the brothers sensed that Yosef wanted to rule over them, they said, "Hamoloch timloch aleinu, do you think we're going to make you a king willingly? And if not, hamoshel timshel bon, do you think you're going to rule over us against our will?" A moshel is what's known as a tyrant. In modern usage, tyrant has a bad connotation, but it's not necessarily bad. A tyrant is a ruler who doesn't necessarily rule with the consent of the people, even if he's good for the people. But a melech, a king, only is if he rules with the consent of the people. That's why it says, Ki Lashem Hamelucha, God really deserves to be king. Everybody should really want him to rule. But Umoshel Bagoyim, Bagoyim, he's only Umoshel, because they don't want him. Or it says, what's it called? Memshele Zodo, the Sultan, has a kingdom, but it's a Memshele, it's not a Malchus, because it's against the will. Most people don't want the Sultan to be in charge. So it's only Memshele Zodo. In any case, therefore, it's impossible to appoint a king unless the people come first and say, we want him. Because if they don't say they want him, the most you can appoint is a Moshe, not a Melech. So if you want to appoint a melech, first the people have to say we want him. It says, Adon Olam Asher Molach B'Terem Kol Yitzir Nivra. God was king before anything was created. Yet it says that on Friday, we say, Shir Shalom Hashem Molach, God reigned, because until Friday, when God finished creation, he didn't rule over creation. On Friday, he finished it and he ruled over it. Now, if he was a melech already from before creation, that means he became a melech as things were created. Why do you have to become a melech on Friday? He was an ongoing melech. The answer is simple. Before there was anything created, God was intrinsically a melech. Once he created something, he couldn't be a melech anymore until something accepted him willingly. Nothing in this world has free choice except for human beings. Therefore, until man was created and could accept God as a king willingly, he wasn't a king anymore. He only became a king when man accepted him for the whole world. Then he became king. So what happened that first Friday of creation, which corresponds to every Rosh Hashanah, where every Rosh Hashanah we relive that first Friday of creation, man accepted God as the king and made him king, coronated him as king. So every Rosh Hashanah, we renew God's contract as king for another year, by accepting him willingly. It's not that we accept the authority of his out of his kingdom. That we do every day. God is king every day, and every day we have to accept his authority. But on Rosh Hashanah, we create his kingdom. We create him as a king for another year. We make him a king. We coronate him as a king. And it's a yearly thing. Every year is a unit to itself. Every year is a renewal of Maisa Bereishis. And just like that first Friday, God was made king by wanting him to be king. We want God to be king and make him king on Rosh Hashanah. Why do we want him to be king? Right, what's the purpose of it? And how does the shofar represent that? So an earthly king, the Rambam, in various places in Hilchos Malachim, says what the function of a king is. The first function is the king is a unifier. He unifies everything around one unified kingdom, and he gives everybody a unified purpose. That's the first. He's a unifier. Secondly, he provides his kingdom with the wherewithal to contribute their part. He provides them with sustenance. David HaMelech every day met with his advisors to see if Klal Yisrael had an economy or not, and if not, they went out and made wars and bolstered the economy. And a king gives advice, spiritual advice also, to the people. That's why a melech is etzos, advice. And thirdly, the king protects his kingdom. He unifies it, he provides for it, and he protects it. He wages wars from threats from the outside, and he keeps justice on the inside so the kingdom doesn't fall apart. And same thing with God. God unifies everything in creation around him, because everything emanates from him, and it gives a singular purpose in life. Everybody now has a purpose, a divine purpose. It gives us a divine, unified purpose in life. God provides with us, for us, physically, materially, spiritually. Gives us advice. Who here has recently gotten advice from God? All of you are getting it now. And that is not a haughty statement. But Torah is God's advice. And the people who teach you Torah are pipelines. That's all they are. They're just conduits to pass on God's advice to you. Because if it's not, then it's not worth listening to. But it's not only the Torah. Every time you open a sefer, you get advice from God. Every time it thunders, lightnings. Every time you see nature, you're getting advice from God. Right, your body speaks to you in the name of the Rabbanu Shalom. B'cho amar libi bakshu ponoi, no singing. Anecho Hashem avakesh means that my heart says to me, in your name, seek my face. So if you really listen to your heart properly, you don't hear love dub, you hear bakshu ponoi. So the Rabbanu Shalom gives everybody advice, and he fights our battles. Obviously, physical battles, he's protector, and spiritual too, because even our war with the Yetzer Hara, if God wouldn't help us, we couldn't overcome the Yetzer Hara. We have to make the initial step, but in the end, we wouldn't be able to conquer the Yetzer Hara without the Rabbanu Shalom. So God has those three functions. He's a unifier, a provider, and a protector. And therefore, we come on Rosh Hashanah, we say, we want you to be our God. And that coronates the king. The shofar represents that. The shofar is the vehicle for conveying this. How so? First of all, the shofar was blown when they coronated a king. So we blow the shofar to coronate God. But the sounds of the shofar represent the various functions of the king. A tekiah was blown when they want to bring everybody together, unifying. A shvarim says, I'm broken, I need to be provided for. And a truah was blown by milchama, truas milchama, by war. So the three functions of the king, the unifier is represented by the tekiah, the provider by the shvarim, and the warrior, the protector, by the truah. That's malchios. What's zichronos? So, zichronos also, we normally think, we want our good memories to go before God. Remember the good things about us. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, yalu zichronoseichem hatovos lefonai. Let your good memories go before me. It says, yalu zichronoseichem lefonai letova. Let all your memories go before me for the good. Now, how could all our memories be for the good? We have a lot of bad memories, too. So what does it mean, all our memories should be for the good? So, there's another fundamental question here. How can God remember if he can't forget? If there's no such thing as forgetting by God, then how can there be remembering? You can only remember what you forgot. But if you never forget it, there's no remembering. Proof to that is a famous Gemara. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, V'zocharti es brisi Yaakov, V'af es brisi Yitzchak, V'af es brisi Avram eskor, V'oretz eskor. It says remembering by Avram and Yaakov. It doesn't mention remembering by Yitzchak. Why not, says the Gemara? Because since Yitzchak mentally was made into a sacrifice and the ram was in his place, so the ashes of the ram are mamish like the ashes of Yitzchak on the Mizbeach. And since they're there in front of God, there's no remembering. They're there. There's nothing to remember. Remembering is only if you forget something, if it's in the past. But if it's in the present, there's nothing to remember. They once told the Or Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, he was the Mishnagdish Rav in Dvinsk, the Hasidish Rav was the Ragachover, Yosef Rosen. So they once told the Or Sameach that the Ragachover has a phenomenal memory. He has a photographic memory. This is not true. The Ragachover chazes over Shas every few days. What kind of memory does he need? He's not to forget. It's always there. So how could God remember if he can't forget? Ain't shikol if nei kisek vodecho. I think the answer is, or at least one answer is, there's two kinds of forgetting. In the Mela, there's two kinds of remembering. One kind of forgetting is time passes, your mind gets weak, you forget something. Remember it, you bring it back into your consciousness. That doesn't apply to God. There's another kind of remembering and forgetting. If I would say something and somebody didn't hear it, they raise their hand, they say, could you repeat that? I didn't catch it. I said, forget about it. What do you mean forget about it? You told me you didn't hear it. How could you forget it? The answer is, it doesn't mean forget it because get it out of your mind. It means don't consider it. It's not important. Forget about it. Right? Forget about it means it's not important enough to consider. That applies to God. Where so? When before HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, he asked the angels advice, should we create this being called man? He's going to be, his neshama is greater than the angels, but he has a body like an animal. He's not an animal, he's not an angel, he has free choice. What do you think? You know what the angels told God? Mo enosh kisis gerenu. What's man that you should remember him? Now it can't mean remember him because he wasn't created. It means forget about it. Bad idea, right? Not a great idea. Ribbono Shel Olam, forget about it, go on to something else. Create robots, not human beings, right? They're a bad idea. Forget about it. Don't remember it. Don't consider it. The Ribbono Shel Olam ignored the angels, and he created us. Why? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam considers us important. That kind of memory applies to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what happens Rosh Hashanah. Every Rosh Hashanah, again, we relive the creation of man. And when man was created, God showed that he didn't forget about us. He considered us important. And he created us because we are the most important thing in creation. More important than the angels, more important than the planets. Everything in the world depends on us. That's how important we are. Everyone. Every one of us. Especially Jews, but all human beings. The whole world was created for the sake of human beings. And therefore, we're very important. That's what it means. Yalu zichro nosechem lefonai. Your memory, your consideration should go before me, Letova. And we've explained many times in the past, I'm not going to go into detail, Letova doesn't mean for the good. It means for something substantive and eternal. Olam Haba is called Yom Shekulo Tov because it's real, it's eternal. The more substantive something is, that's its good. Bad doesn't really exist, it's an illusion. The more something has existence, the more good it is. So good means something that can continue to exist. Hodu Hashem ki tov, ki liolam chazdo, because he's eternal. Vayar Elokim ki tov, the Ramban says, God wills things into creation by speech, let there be, and how does he now make it continue to exist? He looks at it. Vayar Elokim, and ki tov, now it can continue to exist. So, let our memory consider us for eternity. We are eternally important. And the whole idea of Rosh Hashanah points to that. Right? Person had a dog or a cat. There's plenty of cats around, so everybody must have at least two or three in this room. If you have a cat as a pet, okay, would you spend an hour a year just assessing how your cat purred in the past year, if it kept its fur clean, right, if it ate well, right? But if you would, I can send you to somebody professional, right? Nobody would waste the time for an hour of sitting and assessing how his cat functioned in last year. Now, the distance between any human being and a cat is infinitesimally smaller than the distance between God and a human being. Yet God spends 48 hours a year judging us, meaning, what did he eat? Did he make a bracha? Didn't he make a bracha? What did he wear? What did he think? What did he say? Who in the world cares? Why is it more important to the Rabbanu Sholem what I ate, what I dressed, how what I thought, what I said, than it's important to me about my cat? But obviously, it is important to the Rabbanu Sholem, because what we do is eternally important and universally important. So that means that the judgment of Rosh Hashanah shows how important we are. So the second idea is Zichronos, that we are important enough to consider eternally, and we are the most important thing in creation. That's Zichronos. That the Rabbanu Shalom considers us extremely important. The shofar represents that too. One way the shofar represents that, the shofar is the remembrance of Akedas Yitzchak. Akedas Yitzchak brings out this point. Yitzchak Avinu could have been a sacrifice to God. You know how holy that is? How great that is? Yet God said, I'd rather something else. I'd rather you bring me an animal as a sacrifice and leave Yitzchak Avinu alive. Why? Because there's something greater than dying Al Kiddush Hashem. That's living Al Kiddush Hashem. Yitzchak Avinu's life is more precious even than being a sacrifice. So that teaches me how important human life is, how important the Jewish life is. Secondly, the shofar itself, I think, represents the following. The shofar is a symbol of the whole world. The world is broken into mineral, vegetable, animal. And the mineral provides for the vegetables. The vegetables provide for the animal. And the animal man uses in service of God. Everything serves the thing above it. The shofar is the crown of the animal kingdom. Everything under the shofar, animal, vegetable, mineral, represents the whole world. And man takes that shofar and uses it in service of God. In addition, the shofar is mineral, it's calcium. It is what's it called, looks like a little tree growing on the head of the animal, so it has the idea of vegetable. And it's really animal. So it represents the whole world. Yet the shofar's hollow. The whole world is hollow. It's meaningless. Until a human being blows his neshama into it and makes it a vehicle to connect to God, to communicate with God. That's the world. The world is basically hollow. It's meaningless until a human being uses it to connect himself to God. So we make the world important. That's what the shofar represents. Just like God blew a neshama into us on Rosh Hashanah, we blow it back through the shofar, through the world, to attach ourselves to the Rabbanu Shalom. So the shofar represents this concept of Zichronos. So Malchios represents the fact that we consider God important to us. Zichronos is that God considers us important to him. And Shofros is, so now God's important to you, you're important to him, what's your relationship? The shofar was blown every time God revealed himself in history or will reveal himself in history. The main thing is Matan Torah. The main shofar represents Matan Torah, because that is the ultimate revelation, and God revealed what his relationship to us is, what he expects of us, what we can expect of him. So the shofar represents the relationship. If God is important to me and we're important to him, then what's the relationship between us? That's shofar. What does it mean to bring yourself as a sacrifice to God? Right? You don't jump up in the air. Right? You don't put yourself on a barbecue. What does it mean? Sacrifice is something that brings you closer to the Rabbanu Shalom. Korban. You vicariously, by burning an animal on the altar, you vicariously surrender yourself to God. So bringing yourself as a sacrifice, meaning surrendering everything you have for the Rabbanu Shalom. Giving yourself over to the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what it means to sacrifice yourself. In order to do that, in order to give something to somebody, you have to know three things. You have to know what the thing is. If I would say, go to my house, get this thigamajig, and give it to so-and-so, you'd have to know three things. One is, what is a thigamajig? So you don't have to search my house and never find what it is I want you to give. First, know what it is that you're giving. Secondly, who's so-and-so? So I know now who I'm giving it to. Thirdly, what does it mean, give it to him? Giving doesn't necessarily mean putting it in his hand. If I tell you, go home and give my house to that so-and-so. I don't mean to tear it apart and give him beam by beam, right? What do I mean? I mean give him the deed, right? So everything has a way of giving it over to somebody else differently. So you have to know what it is you're giving, who you're giving it to, and how to give it. That's Malchus Akronos and Shofros. In order to know how to give myself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have to know who I am. I have to know who God is. And I have to know what our relationship is so I know what it means to give myself over to Him. What does He want? In order to surrender myself to Him. That's Malchus Akronos and Shofros. That's what we do on Rosh Hashanah. And we do it by saying psukim about it, by davening about it, and by blowing the shofar on three levels. One level is more emotional, experiential davening. The other one is more intellectual, saying psukim. And the third is beyond rationale. It's a musical accompaniment. Music is beyond even the emotion and the intellect. It expresses what you can't express in words. So we blow the shofar. That's why we blow the shofar after we say the brachas, not before. It's not to arouse us to the bracha. It's to be mashlim. After we did everything we can intellectualize, emotionally, beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then play the musical instrument that represents these ideas. And that's how you give yourself over as a korban. Now it says that this avodah of Rosh Hashanah prepares us for Yom Kippur. First of all, God is judging us. We're not active in the judgment. But how do you merit a good judgment? By saying, Rabban Shalom, I'm putting myself in your hands. I accept your judgment. I accept you as the judge. I trust you. I'm totally making myself a carbon. That's why the judgment comes out okay. It also prepares for Yom Kippur. Why? It says, L'dovid Hashem Ori, the Medrash says, Shem Meir is Haderech L'Yom HaKippurim. It lights the way to Yom Kippur. How so? The Sfarno says in order to really do tshuva, you have to really appreciate that you did something wrong. You have to really regret it, right? So how do you regret and know you did something wrong? So you have to know you did a sin. Secondly, you have to know that you're capable of doing better. Because if you're not, what's there to regret? If I'm an animal and act like an animal, so what's there to regret? But if I'm not an animal and I act like an animal, then it's something to regret. And thirdly, I have to know who I sinned against. Because if I sinned against my dog, not so terrible. I sinned against the Rabban Shalom, it's pretty serious. So I have to know three things to really do tshuva. One is, what is a sin? Who committed that sin? Me. And who? How important I am? And third, who did I sin against? God, how important He is. Those are exactly Malchus Zichronos and Shofros. To know what a sin is, you have to know your relationship with God. That's Shofros. To know that you sin, that you're important, that's Zichronos. And to know who God is Malchios. So by reaching that level of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, which achieves bringing yourself as a korban to the Rabban Shel Olam, on Rosh Hashanah, it also lights the way to Yom Kippur, that now you're able to appreciate what a sin is, to appreciate how bad it is that you did it, because you're somebody who's fit for something more than that, and to appreciate who you did it against, and then to come to real tshuva, which is charata, regretting it to the point where you will commit yourself, you'll never do it again. That's, in a nutshell, my estimation of what Rosh Hashanah is all about.